Hello and welcome to Playback Daily on Tuesday the 3rd of June. I'm Louise Herity and here's just some of what's coming up.
When you do experience Owen, it might be just looking at a beautiful sunset or looking at the petals in a flower or listening to birdsong. It gives your brain a break.
Make sure your location is on.
On your phone?
Yeah, so that when you lose your friends because you're in a strange place. And actually, they're only around the corner. But they won't know that. They won't know where you are. We don't want people worried. It's just a really easy way of finding each other.
For me, growing up, I was always fascinated by female friendship. And I'm an only child. So my friends were like my sisters almost. And I think we expect that when we have great friends as children, that they'll always be our friends and they'll always be there for us.
A landmark new international cancer study has found that exercise has huge benefits for cancer patients and can even reduce the risk of the disease returning. Here's Mary Wilson with more on Morning Ireland.
The results were presented at the American Society of Clinical Oncology annual conference in Chicago at the weekend and published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Among those attending the expert gathering was Professor Janice Walsh, medical oncologist at St. Vincent's University Hospital in Dublin. She's been telling our reporter Ethna Dodd more about the study.
This is an incredible, strong finding and really adds to literature that suggests that exercise is really important in keeping ourselves well after we've had a cancer diagnosis. So we were so excited to see this study being reported out. It's called the Challenge Study. It was an international study that was completed in 55 sites. And essentially what they did was took nearly 890 patients who had high-risk colon cancer, so that's stage 2 and stage 3 colon cancer, who'd completed their chemotherapy, and then they were randomised to one of two arms. So the first was a structured exercise programme, which was supervised by a personal trainer. So they had face-to-face interventions twice a month and supervised exercise sessions up to 3 years. It was an aerobic exercise program. So patients were doing 45 to 60 minute walks 3 to 4 times a week. And as they got more fit, that they wanted to do more, they could choose to do more. And that was in combination with the behavioral therapy program. The others who were in the second arm were just given a healthy lifestyle booklet. Here's the information, go off and do it yourself. And essentially what we found was after 5 years that those patients who were in the exercise group had a 28% lower risk of disease recurrence are developing new cancers than those who've just been given the booklet. And really what's remarkable is at 8 years, we see a 37% lower risk of dying from your disease as a result of being in that exercise program. This is now grade one evidence to suggest that this should be incorporated and part of any treatment plan.
So for these study participants, as you said, they were in stage 2 or stage 3 of a diagnosis and had gone through a treatment plan. What kind of drugs would you expect those patients to be on? And was there a reason to take some of those drugs off them?
So definitely not, Ethna. On the basis of this trial, all patients had to have received curative therapy, which currently is 6 months of chemotherapy with our most active drugs. So this intervention is not a substitute for drugs that we know already reduce the risk of people dying from different various cancers. And in this setting, colon cancer, this was an adjunct. I think the headlines in the newspapers have been very misleading. I think what they're trying to say is that the magnitude of benefit we have seen with this intervention, i.e. exercise program supervised versus not, is the type of reductions we've seen with many of our new drugs. But this is not a drug substitute. This is on top of you receiving the best drugs in the market to reduce the risk of disease recurrence. So this is not a substitution. This is an adjunct therapy.
What message would you like to give patients who'd see a study like this? Like, what should they take away from it?
It is really hard if you're somebody who has never enjoyed exercise or you haven't had the confidence to engage in exercise. What we know is that this can make you do better. Don't be afraid of it. There are many programs available which will teach you how to increase at your own pace. The benefits are far-reaching and really important for you.
Professor Janice Walsh talking to reporter Ethna Dodd on Morning Ireland. Yesterday was a bank holiday, which usually means we're treated to Marty Morrissey and guests in the morning on Radio 1. And the host was joined by Dr. Mark Rowe, GP with a special interest in burnout prevention and lifestyle medicine.
My next guest says that we should make time for awe in our daily lives and that having this emotion, even for 5 minutes, is scientifically proven to reduce feelings of stress and anxiety. Welcome news in this increasingly stressful world. Dr. Mark Rowe is a GP with a special interest in burnout prevention and lifestyle medicine, and he joins me in studio. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Marty. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for being here. You've come all the way from Waterford this morning. We all talk amongst my colleagues and friends about being busy. Other people from outside of our, when we meet other friends, talk about the stress, everything is so busy. And as we get older, I think things were supposed to calm down, but they're gone the other direction.
Yeah,
what's your reaction to that?
Well, the world has become increasingly stressful for all sorts of reasons. I think social media, the 24/7 news cycle, and people have many real pressures, whether it's financial pressures, pressures to match up, that sense of feeling that you need to be perfect or that you're quite not good enough. You know, there's a lot of pressures and stresses on people. On top of that, Marty, we've had the sort of after effect of the pandemic. You know, there's been so much loneliness, isolation, disconnection. fMRI scans of the brain show that when you're experiencing loneliness, which is really a sense of being excluded or out of the crowd, as it were, those same brain areas that experience physical pain light up. So loneliness really is the most terrible poverty. And despite everyone being so hyper-connected through social media, people have never been more lonely and disconnected. So there are many, many reasons why people are feeling stressed. But the whole key really is to be able to recharge from stress. And building circuit breakers into your day, whether it's a great coffee cup conversation with a friend, whether it's getting up and moving, and as we're going to talk about now, experiencing micro moments of awe can be really so incredibly good for us. I used to think, now the word awe, it's a confusing word because you think of the American term awesome.
I use it myself.
You know, yeah. And in Ireland, like that's like, you know, great crack out with the lads or whatever and your friends. But really, awe is really an intense positive emotion of experiencing that sense of wonder. It's like seeing something through the eyes of a child. As Einstein said, it's that intersection between science and art. It's seeing things through the lens of curiosity. It's seeing somebody, you know, doing an act of kindness, witnessing moral courage, seeing somebody overcoming adversity, a beautiful sunset, listening to the birds singing. But
is that not just an appreciation of life and the world we live in? And that sometimes, like when I go home to West Clare and I look out the back door, I see the stars, which you can't really see that clearly in urban Ireland because of all the lights, which I also love. But is that just not...
And how does that make you feel when you see the
stars? Oh, I love it. Yeah. The very point you're making, it is an appreciation of what's around us. Sometimes we're so busy and we're on our phones looking at Instagram and Twitter, which is another... I mean, I'm guilty of it myself, so I'm being honest.
And I think research from Harvard backs this up that you know, half of the time we're not there at all. We're so distracted. We're back in the past or out in the future that hasn't even arrived. So it is about the present moment, as you said. And when you do experience awe, and it might be just looking at a beautiful sunset or looking at the petals in a flower or listening to birdsong, it gives your brain a break. It quietens what's called the default mode network in the brain, which is the mind-wandering system. And that builds presence and patience and perspective. It opens up you to connection with the world around you and that feeling of transcendence. And what's really interesting is the brain chemical changes that happen, Marty, as well. You release oxytocin, which makes you feel more open, more open to experience, more open to connect with other people. That enables you to recharge from stress. You release dopamine, which enhances a feeling of wanting to explore, curiosity, noradrenaline, which makes you feel more focused. You reduce levels of inflammatory markers in the blood. These are things called interleukins, interleukin 6. So you improve your physical health. You recharge from stress. And you really build that sense of connection. And that's a great way to enhance your overall life satisfaction. But
is this not, Mark, just going, is this not getting the life-work balance right? Is that all? Or is that wellness?
Well, you know, one of the great things about Oz is you say wellness. The first two letters in wellness are W and E. Mm. It's us. It's together.
It's we. Mm.
And one of the great ways to experience Oz is what they term collective effervescence. Being at a great sporting occasion. For you now, the All-Ireland. Mm. For you watching a great hurling match. Being at a concert. That sense of togetherness. And I suppose awe is one of the ways that we can experience well-being. But it's to experience that sense of presence and to allow yourself to be fully where you are when you're there. And it can really make such a difference.
Now, you've been a doctor. Have you always been a doctor in Waterford, Mark?
Mm.
So you've been a doctor...
30 years.
For 30 years. So do you think people are getting more stressed?
It's not just that I think it. I think the science backs that up. More people are experiencing more stress. More people than ever are finding stress in their lives more challenging. I mean, if you look at the research, even among healthcare professionals, nurses, doctors, carers, you know, at any one time, at least one in three of them are experiencing burnout. Mm. So there's an epidemic of stress-related illness in the world. It's really the silent thing that's in the corner, as it were, but it's always there.
And can I ask, Mark, when somebody comes in, if I walked into you tomorrow, into your surgery, what would you see, not me now personally, but I'm just saying, what are the symptoms of stress?
Well, you see, stress is such a subjective thing, as it were. So what makes Marty feel stressed might be very different to what makes somebody else feel stressed. So a certain amount of stress is good for us. I mean, if you didn't have stress, if I didn't have any stress, I wouldn't have been able to get out of bed in the morning. Yeah. You know, I mean, it gets us going. But it's when you reach that tipping point of excess stress where it becomes toxic stress. And now it's having a negative impact on the brain. You get stuck in that ruminative state of negative stress, feeling more anxious. I call it the merry-go-mind of kind of anxious, repetitive thoughts. Your memory center becomes braided in fear. You burn a hole in your willpower muscles, so you're less able to, you know, sustain health-enhancing habits. So you move to self-sabotage. Mm. You burn all this fuel in your brain, so now you crave comfort. So you'll crave sugar, you'll crave alcohol, you'll crave dopamine, you'll crave whatever it is. And then downstairs in the body, stress causes all these stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline, which causes cellular inflammation of your cells. You release a lot more insulin, so you feel hungrier. Your energy goes down. You store a lot more.
You either lose weight or you put on weight. For people like me, anyway, I know if I'm stressed, I kind of put on the weight.
So I suppose we're all very, very complex people. You know, the mind and the body are so interconnected. And while a certain amount of stress can be good for us, it's when it tips over into that negative state, and then it can affect someone's sleep. It can affect somebody's mood, their mojo, their quality of life. But what I would say is, you know, all positive change, Marty, starts on the inside for all of us. And it starts with awareness. Simply being aware of how you are, how your life is, what's going on in your life that you can't change. Mm. And that's lots of things for all of us.
100%.
But there's always some things we can change. And that's the power we have.
And one of the things you mentioned earlier, but it's one of my hobby horses, is that the amount of loneliness that there is in the world. I remember when I was a small boy, people would call in to the house all the time. Now they either phone or text, are you at home? And I think people should go back to visiting people.
Absolutely.
Because loneliness is everywhere. And you don't have to be 85. You can be 18 or 19 and just feel lonely. But social interaction, surely, the connection is so important.
We're human beings. And that word being is that sense of, you know, that sense of connection. It was a brilliant study done in Harvard University, the Harvard Study of Adult Development. The leading indicator of our well-being, Marty, is the quality of our social relationships. And people are crying out for real human connection. And it's a real gift to give someone the gift of your time, the gift of your presence. And it's something I'd say to anyone listening today. What can you do today on this beautiful bank holiday Monday to reach out to somebody else? Maybe there's a friend out there you haven't called for a while. Maybe you could meet him or her for coffee.
And, okay, let's go back to awe for one moment. Mm. What do you want from this programme to send the message to anybody who's listening to us this morning? What's the essential ingredient? Because, by the way, just before you answer that, Mark, I'm getting loads of texts here. Promote curiosity and wonder. This is a text. Children benefit from asking questions. We as adults should continue to ask lots of questions. Time is probably the biggest block for us as grown-ups. We're always on the run. Take time deliberately.
And I think that's a great point, to never stop learning, never stop starting, never stop asking questions. It's really so much better for us to ask the questions rather than know the answers. You know, ask the questions like, who are you? How can you connect more with your purpose? How can you serve others more? How can you be a better neighbour? How can you be a better friend? How can you be better to your family members? You know, these are the great questions to ask ourselves.
What about the power of ritual? Is that powerful?
It can be. Yeah. Oh, it can be tremendously powerful. I have a little ritual I call GLAD that I do most mornings. G-L-A-D, G, what am I grateful for today? Three things, they could be big things, little things, because gratitude is such, it's not just such an antidote to stress, but it's a great way to build sort of heartfelt positivity and connect you more closely with who you are on the inside. L, what am I going to learn today? Every day is a learning day. Never stop learning. Into your 90s, we can keep learning new things. A, who can I appreciate? Because people are crying out for a little bit of appreciation. I often say when I'm giving talks, you know, people have never come into me in my practice and said, Mark, I'm just being overappreciated. Everyone in RTE loves me. Everyone in my family loves me. You know,
doesn't happen, I can tell you, Mark.
But, you know, people are often beaten down in workplaces or in relationships, but choosing to actively appreciate somebody, saying thank you, you know, the little things can make such a difference. And then D, how am I dedicating my energy today? Because the pie of energy is always limited.
Yeah.
And are you going to create some time for those things that are important?
It's funny you mentioned that because I was at Bloom last week. We were doing a program there, myself and Anya Lawler and a whole team of great, talented people. But we met loads of young children with their parents and they wanted to say hello or whatever. But it was always, I loved it because it really struck me how good the parents of Ireland are, how good the children are. Mm. Because thank you was the most two little words that I heard all the time. Mm. And I know it was drilled into, but the children just with their eyes just said thank you. We should really be appreciative. That's what I'm trying to say. From birth onwards, every day is a good day if we can make it a good day.
And you know, being an encourager, small words of appreciation and encouragement and kindness to other people can make such a difference. A lot of people are carrying a lot of things behind the mask they put onto the world, and just choosing to be a little bit kinder, choosing to be a little bit more appreciative, it's something we can do. It costs nothing, only a little bit of awareness. And it can make a big difference. And I think there's so much more we can all do to support each other. And, you know, through the small actions, you know, I think it was Mother Teresa once said, none of us can do great things, but we can do little things with great love.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful line, that idea that we can, through small acts of kindness, we can reach out and support each other.
And I think this is important, I suppose, in the sense that we're surrounded by emails. I mean, I don't understand why people don't ring. They send emails quicker than they do a phone call, or they send a text quicker than a phone call.
Their brain to yours.
Yeah, correct. I always like to talk. And some people say, would he ever shut up? But like, I like to talk to somebody. But it's all email technology. Mm. And yet the kind word, the human word, is so important. I just go back to the text. Morning, Marty and the good doctor. I'm now over 70 years. There was a time when I was so fussy. I couldn't have a cup in the sink overnight. Now I couldn't care less. Life is so good. I will now do things when I have time. Great show, Marty. Thank you, Jane. Jane in Blackwater. But isn't she right?
She's dead right. And, you know, as people get older, people can become really wise. And I think, you know, there's a whole new conversation to be had in Ireland about celebrating older people because they really have that sense of wisdom and that sense of life experience to be able to differentiate the few things that matter from the many things that don't.
Well, I have to say, Dr. Mark, we have started the conversation and of course in the radio show, because it's part of our communication, we send out, text us 51551 and they are texting us, but we are saying, stop texting and start phoning or calling in. Meet up, drop by, say hello, talk, be a friend. We are human. Thank you, Anne. is saying there. So the message and the conversation hopefully will start. And start today. Go down to a neighbour that you haven't called in. Don't bother texting or phoning. Just pop in. Mm. How are you, Paddy? How are you, John? How are you, Mary?
You know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the next best time is today. Yeah. Just start.
Absolutely start, yeah.
Dr. Mark Rowe on the Marty Morrissey Show yesterday. With Leaving Cert holiday and J1 season almost upon us, Fiona Penelar, the Director General of the Citizen Services Division at the Department of Foreign Affairs, joined Claire Byrne with some travel advice.
We think about a year ago, but it was around this time last year, because this is the time, isn't it, when people are thinking about going on just the family holiday or sending somebody off on their first holiday on their own, which is the big one.
Exactly. And as a mammy, I can definitely imagine how people are feeling as J1 students, as Leaving Cert holiday students. I know they have to get through the Leaving Cert tomorrow, but I figure for many of them that the focus is already on that trip to Greece or wherever it is. So really, about 10 days ago, the Tánaiste launched a consular campaign. And the idea was just to remind people that really, when you're going off, make the right memories. You know, it'll be a wonderful summer as a J1er. It'll be a wonderful summer for your Leaving Cert holiday or whatever else you're doing, solo travelling. But just to make sure you have done that little bit of prep so that you're ready to go and that things will be work out as well as they can.
So when you say do the little bit of prep, what do you want people to do?
So I guess a couple of quite basic things, but travel insurance. Make sure you have it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people feel, well, I have Irish health insurance, won't I be fine? Or, you know, I have the European health card. And they're all good, but really for that small percentage, and we hope you never need to use it, make sure you have the travel insurance. Another, again, it seems basic, make sure your passport's in date. You know where it is. I would say for J1 students, your J1 visa is in that passport. So really, when you're going out to have a few drinks at night and you need ID, have alternative ID.
Don't bring your passport.
Yeah, because that can be quite a challenging thing to replace, that visa. I guess another few basic things, which again, you do all the time at home, make sure your location is on.
On your phone?
Yeah, so that when you lose your friends because you're in a strange place, and actually they're only around the corner, but they won't know that, they won't know where you are. We don't want people worried. It's just a really easy way of finding each other. Mm-hmm. Then again, the mammy advice, ring home. Just text them. Tell them you're having a wonderful time, but that you are okay. And it's just, again, you do that when you're at home. You're talking to them all the time, to the family and friends. But, you know,
just keep in touch.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just so people aren't worried about you, because they really, everyone wants you to have a fabulous time. So just to make sure you do.
People are asking for your help more and more, aren't they? Consular assistance up by 22% so far in this year, 2025.
Yeah, very interesting. And there's no particular one reason for it. I think there's a variety of things definitely all contribute. I suppose if I look at the positive, it is that people are coming to us. And that's really good. And it's really important to know to come to us to make sure that if there is something that goes wrong, we're there to help you. Contact your local embassy. If for any reason you can't find those details, even though they are on our TravelWise page at ireland.ie/TravelWise, I would also say just ring Department of Foreign Affairs headquarters. That's a 24-hour service and they'll make sure that someone can look after you.
Mm-hmm. So I know you can't generalise, you know, that increase is there, but what are the types of things that people are coming to you for help with?
And honestly, there is such a variety. Definitely there is an increase in mental health cases. And again, I see that as people feel they can come and say, look, I'm actually not in the right space. And that's brilliant, because then we can work with you. We can help, you know, contact your family if you want us to. Friends, just make sure you do get help. Mm-hmm. People losing passports. People, you know, unfortunately, maybe making the wrong decision about jumping into a pool or into the sea. It seems like great crack late at night. Things that really are preventable. And that's why we really want people to have that few minutes of thinking before you go, and just to be prepared and make sure that, as I say, the slogan is making the right memories. But it really is important that you come back with having had a wonderful time.
Now, we have questions coming in, which we'll get to in a minute. But Sean is fully on board with not bringing your passport with you. He says, get a passport card and use that for ID. Don't bring the paper one out. Can you have both?
Absolutely. I didn't tee Sean up, but fair play to you, Sean. You took the words right out of my mouth. Yes, absolutely. A passport card, while it's not valid for travel outside outside Europe, most places will accept it as ID. You can apply for them both together, applying online. Or if you already have your passport book, you can just apply for the card separately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a quick turnaround and it's a really handy thing to have.
But as you say, your driving licence or your student card, whatever it is, just don't use your passport on a night out as your ID.
Exactly. I know that many people have it in their back pocket. It's so easy to lose it. And then it can just be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to have the passport, but whatever the visa was in it, whatever it's connected to, just adds layers of complication that you don't need.
And you mentioned the website. It's ireland.ie. It couldn't be easier. And that's where you go, and it's
exactly
worthwhile, even if you're going on a short holiday, to go in there and have a look. Are there any issues with the country you're going to? What are the customs? What are the laws? What do you need to be aware of?
Exactly. There's a dedicated page for every country, and our embassies in those countries update the travel advice constantly. So we're very much on top of what is the latest. There's also a section, for instance, for J1 students. There's a section for Leaving Cert students and young people travelling. Just again, those things mm-hmm. I've said, nothing that is earth shattering or different, but just so you have it on the top of your mind.
And just to go back over the health insurance or the travel insurance mm-hmm. again. So if I'm a J1 or a Leaving Cert student going out on my holidays, your mammy and daddy has... They have travel insurance.
Well, I think with the J1, it's included as part of the package. But for your Leaving Cert holiday, absolutely. Mammy, daddy might have insurance and hopefully you're named on it.
Yeah.
And that's covered. But make sure. And make sure it's travel insurance and make sure it's valid for the countries you're going to. Because I know there are different types of travel insurance. That you, there's ones just for Europe. There's ones for the entire world. There's ones for sports, water sports, skiing, things like that. So you just need to spend those couple of minutes and just make sure you have the right travel insurance, because it'll hopefully, as I say, you'll never need to use it.
I know,
it.
But if you do,
yes,
you have exactly. it there. Right, let's get to some questions. So Christine has been in touch. We're in Ireland visiting family and we're heading to Spain and Portugal next week for a holiday. I have an Irish passport, so I'm OK, but my husband has an Australian and a UK passport. And her question is, should he use his UK passport for travel and does he need a visa? The trip is for 4 weeks. So travelling to the EU countries from Ireland, Australian or UK passport?
Honestly, I don't have the answer to that. I think you need to contact the Spanish embassy here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be confident saying that on an Irish passport, you don't require a visa. But obviously, the laws of immigration for each country are their own responsibility. So I don't know the answer.
So you're saying contact the embassy of the country you're travelling to rather
exactly.
than the Australian or the UK
Absolutely,
embassy?
Absolutely, because it is the country that you're travelling to that determine their immigration laws, and they will give you the best advice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Christine, for getting in touch. Another one here. I'd love advice regarding keeping our young people safe on the post-Leaving Cert holiday. I have a guy heading off in June. I'm dreading it. I'm nearly more nervous about that than I am about the Leaving Cert starting tomorrow. Do you know, I can kind of understand that, and you can as well,
Absolutely.
Fiona. One piece of advice that I'd like to share with other parents is to check your travel insurance. I checked ours and it transpired that we had family cover that only covered my son when he's travelling with us on family holidays or on organised trips like school tours. I've had to take out separate individual insurance for him. So it's really worth a call to your insurance company to check your policy, which is exactly what you have been saying to us. But what other advice do you have for parents all over the country who are in that position where the exam is sort of secondary to the worries over the holiday?
And totally, I can absolutely understand it. I suppose what I would say is, while I'm talking about the worst case scenarios and, you know, what you do and the increase in consular cases,
mm-hmm.
the vast majority of people go and they have a wonderful time.
And they come back and they're fine.
Exactly. And they talk about it for the next 20 and 30 years because it was one of the best summers of their life. So I really think, you know, we do need to keep it in perspective. But at the same time, by having that little checklist and by doing the things exactly like the travel insurance, then I think we're in a much better position as parents letting our kids off.
OK, my daughter's experience on her J1 in San Diego 2 years ago was that nothing other than her passport was accepted as ID. Her driver's license or passport card were not accepted. It's interesting.
So again, it is up to each individual bar. And there might be different rules in different bars about what,
yeah.
who let you in. But I guess what I would be saying to people is you really need to consider the consequences, particularly on a J1 if you lose your passport and you lose your J1 visa.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe bouncers could be a little, you know, have the chats with them, see there might be other bars. It's a balancing act.
Yeah, but your concern, what you're saying is, will you keep your passport safe?
Absolutely, because not only is it the passport, but it's a J1, it's your visa.
Right, listen, on the J1s, and we've been talking about this on the programme, because of what's been happening in the United States, Donald Trump's decision to pause new visa interviews, we understand for foreign students, and there are reports as well that there could be social media vetting around the J1s. What's your advice on them?
So I suppose the first thing is to say that it's an absolute priority for the Tánaiste and for all of us, I think, to maintain and enhance those people-to-people relationships we have between Ireland and America. Like, it's a wonderful programme. It's a wonderful experience. I myself was a J1 student, as my children say, back in the olden days. But it's a really great thing to do. So I think we need to focus on that. I am aware of reports that some new applications have been paused, but as I understand it, and this is only anecdotally, but for the 5,500 Irish J1 students going this year, I understand that there is no impact or very limited impact. Existing appointments are going ahead. So I think that, again, and I would say this to people going anywhere in the world, you have to respect the local laws, the local customs, and things can be different. So, you know, your interaction with a member of An Garda the Síochána kind of having a bit of banter and a bit of crack would be different to maybe you'd have with law enforcement in other places. It's the same with immigration. The rules, like I was saying about Spain and that lady was wondering about travelling, immigration laws are a matter for the country that you're going to. Mm-hmm. And everyone has different rules and they're entitled to set their rules. So all we can advise people is make sure you respect them, work within the boundaries of what you're being told by the place you're going to, and then I think you'll have a wonderful time.
So what you're not saying is cancel your trip or think twice about it. You're not even close to saying that.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. I think a J1 experience is wonderful. Mm-hmm. But no matter where you go in the world, as I say, you have to respect the laws, the customs of where you're going. So that's really important to just be conscious of that.
Right. And be careful maybe of involving yourself in political activism when you go to another country.
Absolutely, because laws, again, customs, they're different. People look at things differently. So I would absolutely say to people, respect where you're going. They have rules. You're making a decision to go there. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you are agreeing to abide by their rules, their laws, their customs.
Okay. What ID is needed between here and our next door neighbours? That's a good question. I was in Wales at the weekend. Nobody asked me for my passport.
So as part of the common travel area, we can travel between Ireland and Great Britain without ID. However, some airline carriers do require passport for travel.
Yeah.
So it varies by your airline or by your ferry rather than necessarily.
Yeah, you'll be asked if you're flying pretty much almost certainly, won't you? And maybe not if you're on a ferry.
Yeah, I think perhaps Aer Lingus will accept a driver's license. But again, you check with your carrier to make sure. But from an immigration point of view, we're in a common travel area.
Right. OK. Now, another one. I'm travelling to Spain on the 26th of June. My passport expires in October 2025. Can I travel or do I need to renew my passport before I travel? And we get this a lot when we talk about passports. You know, what is the lead-in time on the passport?
And it does vary by country. Off the top of my head, what I would say is that in Spain and within the EU, you don't require validity longer than your trip. Mm-hmm. So if you are travelling in June and your passport doesn't expire till October, that sounds perfectly fine to me. I would always make sure and just check their website. I know, for instance, in Turkey, you require 6 months validity after you've returned from your holiday.
Right.
So it varies depending where you're going. Again, while I wouldn't say necessarily take my word for it, I would check with on the website of the place you're going.
Okay.
It's the easiest way to make sure.
But you reckon that person would be okay, but still worth having a little check.
Absolutely.
And that was Fiona Penelar, Director General of Consular and Passport Services, chatting to Claire Byrne today. Dublin's Glasnevin Cemetery has announced it will host its first ever queer history tours from the 20th to the 22nd of June, celebrating pride and exploring LGBTQ+ life in Ireland since the 1800s. Anna Collins is a tour guide and researcher at Dublin Cemetery Trust, and she has written and researched the tour. She spoke to Dermot Whelan, who was in for Oliver Callan this morning.
Hey, Dermot, how's it going? Good morning.
Good, thanks. What kind of time period does the tour cover?
It
kind of covers almost back to our foundation as a cemetery. So like the oldest person we'd be talking about would have been born in the 1850s. And then the most recent death on the tour would be 1995. So it really spans quite a breadth.
How do you research something like this? Because I can't imagine there was tons of information, because homosexuality was a taboo subject up until shockingly recently. So how did you find these individual stories?
Well, you've kind of hit the nail on the head there that it was quite difficult. But honestly, even within the cemetery, I pulled on a lot of staff. The people here are so knowledgeable. A lot of the other tour guides are really passionate about the place. You know, a lot of the time on the tours, you'll be hearing people talk about the really famous, really well-known figures, Collins, De Valera. But the people who work here really care about everyone in the cemetery. And so they have all these really interesting stories of people. So initially, I just put a call out. You know, I said to everyone, all right, who do you know about? Who have you heard about? And it was a lot of kind of initially clicking through Wikipedia rabbit holes and things like that.
Yeah.
And seeing, is there any credibility to any of that? Have any researchers actually found anything about that? And so there was a long process of building up a list of names and then tearing down a list of names.
Well, take us through one or two of them. What are the stories that have excited you?
Well, so I'd say probably the best known contemporary figure on the tour would be the likes of the Diceman, Tom McGinty. You know, he was a really well-known figure within Dublin City. He was a street performer, an artist who mainly worked on Grafton Street, but he really developed this kind of name for himself, this really iconic look. He was known for standing really, really still, having this like zen-like energy. And he really brought so much life to the street. In fact, when he died, they carried his coffin down Grafton Street. The shops all closed, and the shops contributed to the cost of his funeral, carried it down Grafton Street into the hearse and drove it into Athnevin Cemetery.
Wow. And you wonder if those kinds of characters are, you know, he's trying to think, is there anybody that shops would do that for now? You know,
he, I know.
Those these kind of iconic locals that these characters that, that live on after their deaths. And tell us about Jack Saul.
I think I've managed to spread his name all around Dublin at this point. I love the guy. So he would have been born in like the 1850s in the Liberties, you know, really kind of normal working class family. His family were all taxi drivers. But he decided he'd take a bit of a different route. He took up sex work at the time. You know, Dublin was this kind of military port for Britain. And so there was lots of brothels in the city, mainly in the Monto. And so he started doing that in Dublin. And then made his way over to London, and he just managed to get himself embroiled in like scandal after scandal. You know, this regular working class guy was having to appear in courtrooms against like lords and dukes and things like that. And so he really kind of developed a bit of a name for himself, quite a scandalous figure. But he did actually return to Dublin. He died in Dublin City, kind of living with his brothers. And he's buried here right beside the Botanics as well.
Yeah. How did you end up getting involved in this tour? Do you have a connection to the LGBTQ plus community, or is it just something that interested you from a historical point of view?
I am myself queer, of course, but just an interest in the history. You know, at the moment, it's thankfully a really growing part of kind of Irish history is queer history. There's a lot of research going on right now that really wasn't happening kind of 5-10 years ago, or at least wasn't kind of being published and being recognised 5-10 years ago. So I think I'm really lucky at the moment to be able to pull on the work of some really good historians.
Did you ever think you'd end up working in a cemetery?
No. I'm entirely honest with you, no.
What was that joke? I've got 400 people under me. It's a great job.
Exactly.
Yeah, but and obviously one that interests you.
Yeah, it really does. It kind of surprised me when I started here, just how much I like it. But you really do get kind of the breath of Dublin City. Like, I love Dublin. I've lived here since I was around 17, 18 years of age. And you do really get the variety of life that exists within the city. You know, I say it all the time, people come here because we're a Republican side, because we have this connection with political history, and that's completely true. Oh, sorry, can you hear me? There's a bit of noise going on in the background. But people come here because we're kind of a Republican site, but really in the cemetery, there's every type of life that's ever existed in Dublin. And so when you're researching here, you really get to capture all of that as well.
Anna Collins from Glasnevin Pride Month Tours, chatting to Dermot Whelan on the Oliver Callan Show this morning. Well, kids, summer holidays are just around the corner, but as always, we need to plan for the unpredictable weather. How do you entertain the whole family on those rainy days? Well, Ruth Roberts, co-owner of Cog Toys and Games, joined Claire Byrne.
Hi, Claire. Thanks for having me on.
With your selection of goodies.
Yes.
Now, listen, the thing is, we'll plan all of these things and they mightn't go for the things that we plan, but we're doing our best here, right? And we're going to start with the simplest and the one that maybe we all remember, just a deck of cards.
Yes, the humble deck of cards is the ultimate travel game in my eyes. It's so versatile, it's so cheap, and there are so many games you can play with a deck of cards. You can throw it into your handbag or your man bag and just have it ready to go if there's a long wait in a restaurant or an airport. And there's so many simple games that you can play with that. And the games that you can play with a deck of cards are actually so educational as well.
Mm-hmm. Remind us of the simple ones, because I think a lot of us think of, you know, the more complicated games like 21. They're maybe difficult for children. But there's, I mean, from Snap.
Yeah, from Snap or Memory. So they're great ones for kind of three and up. My lads absolutely love Go Fish. So they're 6 and 7. So that's a great one that they love playing. You have Old Maid, Beggar My Neighbour, and it's a great one actually for grandparents to get involved with too. So a really intergenerational one where you can bond together and play cards. So grandparents, teach your grandkids how to play some card games, because
exactly.
It's actually a lost skill now.
It is, yeah, it is. You need somebody to teach you the rules so that you can try and avoid the rows. We were playing Uno yesterday, and Dobble. They're favourites as well, aren't they?
They're absolutely like the ultimate travel games. I love just small, simple games that are really quick to pick up, and you can play with a small number or a really, really big number. And what's great about the games you just mentioned as well is that they're really inclusive. So if you have kind of different abilities or ages, everyone can get involved and have some fun.
Because Dobble is just about, or Uno rather, to start with that one, it's just about matching the colour or the number.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's a really handy one. And Dobble as well, as you mentioned, is another one that's, there's no reading or number or anything involved. Mm-hmm. That's just an observation game where you're literally just matching symbols between two cards and trying to be the fastest person to spot the matches.
And it sounds simple, but your brain tends to freeze. My brain tends to freeze with Dobble.
Yeah, it's a great leveller. Your 4-year-old will usually be better than you than you are.
Now, that's Dobble and Uno. And you've mentioned chess as well, which might sound a little bit complicated for some, but you're saying you can get going with this at a young age too.
Yeah, definitely. And there's no excuse nowadays not to learn chess, because there's so many tutorials and ways to learn online on YouTube or chess.com. And you can pick up a little chess, like a little travel magnetic chess case, costs $3.95. So it's
that's
just
a tiny one.
A tiny
you have
little
there.
One, but the pieces are magnetic, so they're kind of good for travel. They don't go spilling all over the place if you're on a rocky train or anything like that.
Well, that takes us nicely into strategy games then. So a little bit more complex than the ones we've just been talking about.
Yeah. So there's a really nice one called OK Play. So this is a really fun one. It's a little bit like Connect Four, but you can play up to 4 players. And it's really, really simple. You're just trying to get 5 of your tiles in a row. You can play it anywhere. Mm-hmm. You don't need a big table or anything like
that. Are they those coloured blocks that you have
there?
Yeah,
these are these little coloured tiles.
OK Play.
It's a nice tactile one as well.
Okay, so that one is something that you think you can bring with you as well.
It comes with a little clip that just goes on the outside
of your bag. Okay, because I'm looking at it going, are all those bits going to go everywhere in the car? But no, they clip together.
No. It's lovely storage in that one. And actually, Cluster is another great one. So that's a lovely magnetic game. Really simple. Everyone gets a stack of magnets. You have a little ring. A little rope ring that you're placing the magnets inside the ring, trying to get rid of your magnets. But the magnets are pesky and they'll clump together. So sometimes when you place a magnet in the ring, you'll have to end up taking back a load of magnets. The aim being the first person to get rid of their magnets is the winner.
That's a great idea, because they stick together so you can't lose them
exactly,
as easily. Yeah. And Quirkle, what's Quirkle?
So Quirkle is another lovely strategy one that you're getting points based on creating patterns with your lovely little wooden tiles.
Now, we also have to remember that if you're going on a plane journey or a ferry journey or a car journey, sometimes the best thing to have is just a colouring book and pencils.
A colouring book or a sticker book is great. And there's kind of, I've seen on Instagram a lot recently, you see American influencers coming up with busy bags for flights and things like that. But I'm seeing a lot of sand and slime.
No.
Yeah, on the busy bags for the flight. So please think of the flight attendants tidying up. If it's a pain for you cleaning it out of your carpet, it's also going to be a pain for them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just keep it simple, I think.
Yeah, keep it simple. And charades as well, making a bit of a comeback.
Oh, I love charades. So charades is for life, not just for Christmas. In my book, we were recently away from my dad's 80th and all the cousins were there and they had so much fun playing charades, from a 4-year-old up to a 15-year-old.
And how did you come up then? Sometimes that's the biggest challenge, isn't it? Coming up with what you have to guess.
Yeah. And actually the younger kids can struggle with that. So we just went on to ChatGPT and came up with a little list of films that they could have ready to go when it was their turn.
Great idea. Great idea. And what's that you have there? The classic card games for kids. So we were talking about the grandparents passing them on, but that's obviously an instruction kit.
Yeah, this is just a little ready to go set. So if you just want something really quick and easy that is super just fun and ready, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. So when you see those busy bags online, do you think maybe that's over prepping? Can you do that as well, Ruth? Just take it too far?
Oh, definitely. Keep it simple. It's, you know, you're not running the kids club. It's not your job to keep the kids entertained for every hour of the holiday. A bit of boredom is no harm. That's when, you know, kids develop their imagination and their creativity. So it's just have a couple of bags or a couple of games in your handbag that are ready to go, but let them, you know, come up with their own stuff as well. It's so important.
Because you can overwhelm them as well, can't you, with too many things.
Yeah, and it's your holiday too. You have to remember that, you know, we all need a bit of downtime on the holiday. So yeah, just keep it simple. Even a few little sticks of chalk, you know, they can go outside and draw on the path. It's just so simple.
In the rain and let the rain wash it away. You have a soft book as well, which I'm thinking about your baby now, your little 10-month-old.
Yeah, so yeah, we were recently on a flight and these two were lifesavers. So we had the little busy book. There's different flaps and zips and things, little sensory bits that she could play with. And then also these spinners. So it's just a little spinner that has a suction cup at the bottom that can stick onto the window of the aeroplane and it spins around. So nice little attention grabber sensory one.
And you have a quiz book, which is a great idea.
Yeah, I brought that because my 6 and 7-year-olds have gotten really into quizzes at the moment. And the Credit Union School's quiz book is one I'd highly recommend. They love doing little quizzes and that. And it's one that they'll, you know, happily spend kind of half an hour on. And I love to see them doing it.
And
are
the questions for different age groups in there? Because sometimes people can get disheartened, can't they, when they don't know the answers?
Yeah. No, there's a nice mix in those questions. I find the ones at the beginning of the quizzes are usually a little bit easier than the ones at the end. So they have a really nice mix of questions for different levels and abilities.
So tell me now, in general, what's popular at the moment? What are people really going for? You mentioned slime there and oh my gosh, I'm just waiting for the day when it's not popular in my house anymore, but it's still sort of top of the list.
Yeah. It's just all that sensory stuff. And I was just reading recently, actually, the Kidult stuff is really, really popular.
What's that now?
So like Pokemon cards and trading cards and things like that. We have a lot of adults actually buying toys now. You'd see them buying kind of expensive Lego sets and things like that. So that's a real emerging trend in kind of the toy industry.
Right, it's a long way from the fancy paper that we used to collect.
From Pogs.
Any sign of it coming back, the fancy paper?
Not that I have seen. No. They're all mad for jelly cats and all the expensive stuff.
Yeah, the jelly cats are big, but they do like the scented rubbers and the scented pens.
Yeah. Yeah, and stickers are really popular as well.
Stickers,
yeah.
Does it matter what kind or is it just...
It totally just depends on kind of the interest of your kids. Dinosaur stickers, puppy stickers, you know, little kind of cutesy Japanese kind of cartoony stickers. They're all really, really popular.
Right, pack them in the bag for the holidays and don't let them see them until the flight is delayed.
Yeah.
Ruth Roberts, co-owner of Cog Toys and Games, on Today with Claire Byrne. Well, Dermot Whelan, who was in for Oliver today, spoke to self-confessed rom-com queen Vicky Notaro. She's also a best-selling author and she joined the host to talk about her new book, Long Story.
So, Tog, why do you think, and we'll get into the story of the book in a second, but why do you think female relationships have that intricacy? Why are they so different, do you think?
I just think they're really complex. I think the female brain is so different to the male brain.
You think?
And I think we expect a lot more from our friends as women. I think we're raised in society to see friendship, especially female friendship, as this really important thing. Like when I was 10 years old, the Spice Girls came out with a song that literally is like, you know, friendship never ends. And then the show Friends was huge. Sex and the City was huge. So I think for me growing up, I was always fascinated by female friendship. And I'm an only child. So my friends were like my sisters almost. And I think we expect that when we have great friends as children, that they'll always be our friends and they'll always be there for us. And I don't think we put the same work in to platonic relationships, perhaps, as we do to romantic ones. And that's where the idea from the story came from. I also watched a lot of Beaches, you know, the movie Beaches. I watched that every single weekend as a child on videotape with my cousin. And that really got into my psyche, obviously.
It sure did. Well, we're glad it did, because you've created these characters. So this it is a story of two friends. Tara O'Toole is an A-list celebrity. Oscars under her belt and all the tabloid attention to match. And then there's Alex Curtis, her childhood pal, who's now an internationally renowned podcaster and celebrity gossip hound.
Yes.
So it follows the dynamics of their relationship. Of course, there's a love interest involved that makes things a little bit skewways for them. But I love the way that you have approached it from both their perspectives and it flips between Tara and Alex. Tell us about that decision.
It was really important that they both had a voice in this because, you know, obviously they're going to have some troubles along the way. And I didn't want one of them to have more kind of, you know, of a say in who was right or who was wrong, because realistically, there's three sides to the story, each of their sides and the truth. And, you know, neither of them are right and neither of them are wrong.
It's but isn't that how relationships work?
I mean, that's it.
There's no relationship that where people don't see it through a different lens.
Exactly. And for the sake of the plot, it just made it really pacey to go back and forth between the two of them all the time in their own voices. Mm. So it was very important that they each had that distinctive voice and also that the action moves very quickly.
Yeah. So, I think you write great dialogue as well.
Thank you.
Like it's I say dialogue heavy, and that's a positive, I think, because you do write it so well. Do you hear these conversations in your head?
Yes.
And it just, I get the sense, I was like, I bet you this sort of just flows out of her.
Do you know what? This novel really did. I felt like I knew Tara and Alex so well that I could hear them in my head and that I could hear them talking to each other. And, you know, every interaction I've ever had with a female friend is obviously locked away somewhere in my subconscious. So
I was wondering, do you ever get pals? Because I'm in one of my books, I refer to someone who was throwing a tantrum on a golf course. And my brother's like, that's about me. And I was like, it's actually not.
No.
Check your ego. But do you find that maybe friends go, did you paste that? Is that me?
They don't say it to me, but they, do you know what? I have a really strangely good memory. So I think most people don't remember these things that I have kind of stored up, but they never come out as they were. Do you know what I mean? They come out as a version that's been through my brain. They're not kind of exact, but the experience lives with me and then that tends to come out on the page.
Yeah, yeah. You do talk about different things. What's interesting actually is that the characters, even though they're the same age, they are at different places in their life in terms of family and work and all that kind of thing. Do you think it's actually an interesting time to be writing about that, because it reflects how midlife has changed?
Absolutely.
These days it's different.
So these women met when they were 11 years old and they were very much on an even playing field. And then Tara's career takes off when she's quite young. You know, she's kind of motivated to become, she's very ambitious. She wants to become this big actress, this big star. And she knows that you have to kind of do that when you're quite young. And her career takes her, she's won an Oscar before she's 25. You know, she's this hot property. Whereas Alex goes to college and, you know, she's a bit of a slower burn. But yeah, I think that's very true to life. I think I'm 39 years old and a lot, like, I don't think there's any of my friends that are in the same situation in terms of, you know, relationships and family and career. So I think being a 39 year old woman in 2025 is different than it's ever been before.
Do you think that's a positive, that we're not sort of forced to follow the same milestones by a particular age? Like, I'm thinking back to when I got married in 2003. You know, and I was kind of conscious of, you know, I think what age was I, 30 or close to it anyway. And I was conscious that, oh, by this time I should be doing this and by this you're doing this. And, you know, but I think that has changed a bit now.
I think it has changed both for better and for worse. But I love that there's no kind of prescriptive timeline that we have to follow anymore. You know, it's very much go at your own pace. I mean, women always have the fertility, the biological clock hanging over them. But there are things, if you have the money, that you can do to kind of prevent father time from marching all over you. But yeah, I mean, I think, like
red
I said,
wine and dark chocolate, yeah, apparently. That's it. That's what we've learned today.
Yeah, I heard.
Just keep chowing down on that.
Yeah, I think it's a great time to be a woman in many ways, I think. But like everything, the swings and roundabouts, isn't there?
Yeah, you touch on the parasitic nature of celebrity gossip in the book as well. And I guess, given your background as a journalist and magazines, not that you ever engaged in that, but it's part of that.
Yeah,
comes
I
from
consumed
that world.
It.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen the nature of that kind of thing up close, given your previous career?
Yeah, I have. I've had, you know, friends in the industry who've had their bits circled in a magazine, and, you know, like, you know, cellulite or whatever. Stuff like that thankfully doesn't happen anymore at all. Nobody would stand for it. But I've witnessed it over the years. Yeah, I've been in a journalist.
I think it still does happen, though, particularly in terms of women's appearance and how
it does,
expected.
But it's more insidious now. In the past, it was literally in a magazine. It was like a big circle around what they deemed to be a dodgy bit, you know.
Yeah,
whereas I guess now it's a bit more sniping. And
but maybe that sniping comes from now the viewer, the people interacting, the public, as opposed to an editor or a sub-editor who goes, let's zone in on that.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I always worked for very nice magazines. Mm. I worked for Kiss, which was the teenage girls magazine. That was my first job. I was there for 4 years, and the whole point of Kiss was to imbue the reader with confidence and self-esteem and information that they needed from a reliable, authoritative source.
Yeah.
So we never did that. You know, that was never a thing in my world, and I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
You know, I've only had nice jobs.
That's a phenomenon. Has it passed us by now, that girly teen magazine?
Yes, it has. And I think it's a lot to do with attention spans on TikTok, unfortunately. We tried to revive Kiss as a website a few years ago when I was back working for that particular company, and it just didn't take off, unfortunately. And, you know, advertisers are very cautious about working with teenagers, as they should be. It's kind of passed us by. I do worry a little bit about that.
It's kind of sad. I guess, you know, I used to get the male equivalent was Shoot magazine, was the football magazine.
Well, but good, it wasn't Nuts or the other ones, was it? No,
oh,
it was football.
FHM and those things. Yeah, yeah. I guess, I don't know, maybe I dabbled in that 90s lad mag thing, if I think back. But I was thinking when I was younger, when I was a teenager,
right.
I used to love the appointment setting of going to the news agents, you know, whether it was to buy your Whizzer and Chips or Dino and Dandy when you were small, or maybe one of the, you know, the football magazines or whatever. And I guess it was the same for girls as
Absolutely. And I worked there from like 2008 to 2012. So it was a real golden age before the internet really took over. Like, I think we only had Bebo and Facebook then. So the audience were so engaged. They would tell us every month who they wanted on the cover. And if they, you know, they weren't on the cover, there'd be murder, like stuff like that. And yeah, then it went away quite quickly as soon as social media took over. So I think Kiss lasted until about 2014, 2015. But it had a golden era. You know, I think a lot of Irish women remember it very fondly, which is lovely to have worked there.
Yeah. Getting back to rom-coms, do you think they've been given a raw deal? I guess my interests traditionally have been in comedy, and I always feel that comedy movies get looked over at the Oscars. They get passed over for the movies where people cry.
Yeah, the melodramas.
Yeah,
yeah, totally.
And I think maybe some like rom-coms, I think, bring so much joy and escapism to people.
Big time.
And sometimes they don't get, I think, the credit that they possibly deserve. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And that's why I started the podcast You Have Me at Hello, because, you know, so many rom-coms are such comfort watches for people. And I think now more than ever, we need comfort.
Author Vicky Nataro chatting to Dermot Whelan this morning. And that's all we have time for on this edition of Playback Daily. So from me, Louise Herity, thanks for listening and take care.